Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 13th to the 15th, 2016 at the Doubletree Inn in Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming in New England at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information. Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 145. That's right, 145. Mailbag. So I want to welcome all of you to this episode of Wargaming Recon. For all of you, whether you're new or longtime listeners alike, I'm sure you're going to find this to be an interesting, although a little bit different episode. This is the first time that I'm devoting an entire episode to listener feedback. So the episode is called Mailbag, and that's because I'm literally going to be opening like a mailbag, so to speak, a metaphorical mailbag, and literally diving in and answering your questions and your comments, that sort of stuff. So I know that a lot of you listen while you're driving to and from work, and you listen as you're doing all sorts of other stuff. You might be commuting, or maybe you are at the gym or painting and all that kind of stuff. So it's not always easy to remember all the stuff that I talk about. So you only have to remember one thing, and that one thing is the link to the show notes. So remember wargamingrecon.com/WR145. That's wargamingrecon.com/WR145. The reason why I hesitated, and there's a little behind the scenes stuff. So, as you probably know, because we talked about it on the show, I have a baby daughter. And as I record, she usually stays with my wife, or she takes a nap or whatever. And this is a total aside, but she's with my wife, and she's just making really cute, funny noises, which I can hear. And so, it got me to pause and laugh. So anyway, I'm sorry about that. So let's dig into the episode. I want to begin with a bit of listener feedback from the chat room. And in case you don't recall, I do this live. You can watch it on our live page, wargamingrecon.com/live. You can actually go there. You can watch the live feed when I record. And then you can also interact with me and with other listeners by using the chat room that's embedded there. So it's really cool. We have that chat room, and you can comment about what's going on, and I monitor it and I see it, and I might respond to your comments in an episode. And there's also the calendars. You can see all the new stuff that's going to be coming up when they'll be recorded live. So this came from that chat room. And listener Dave actually said about episode 137, which was our great Facebook groups episode. It was like five great Wargaming Facebook groups. It says, quote, "Great show, John. Thanks for the recommendation for Battle Shades," unquote. Dave, as you know, and I'm sure as anyone who's listened to that episode knows, I love the Wargames at Battle Shades Facebook group. It is a fantastic group. It's huge now, actually. It's grown larger and larger. And a benefit of that is the people on it are all over the place, right? So that you can see what other people are working on. You can get some tips. You can get some ideas and inspiration for things to work on. But you can also go and ask questions about stuff. And someone there inevitably has an answer to the question that you might have. So it's a great resource to use. And if you use Facebook, it's worth taking the time to sign up on and become a member of the group and just see what's going on, and try to make it part of your process every day, to build in a little bit of time to pop in there into the group and just take a quick peek. And you can actually even sign up to get notifications on it so that when you become a member on there on the Facebook group, that their content will be put to the top of your newsfeed. And I think Facebook might even do push notifications. So if you have a smart device, let's say you have a smartphone, an iPhone was what I use. Let's say you have one of those, you can get it so that whenever there's new content posted to the Battle Shades Facebook group, it'll get pushed, so to speak, to appear right on your phone without you even having to go into Facebook. So you can have your phone put down on your desk or wherever, you pick it up and you look and you're like, oh wait, I got all these things that happen on Facebook, and you'll see all the stuff that happened on Battle Shades, and then you can just kind of swipe into it. And that'll take you directly to the content that they're talking about. So if I were to happen to say on the Battle Shades group, hey, there's also some new cool thing going on, you could get that to appear on your smart device, and you say, oh wait, Jonathan said there's this awesome cool new thing going on. You just swipe and bam, you're taken right to the thing I had said, so you can get more information, or maybe there's a photo and all that sort of stuff. Battle Shades is really just an incredible Facebook group. It's completely worth your time to join. And like I said, it's just a great place to get a lot of inspiration. So, Dave, I you're welcome for the inclusion of recommending it in that episode. It is just, it's truly a great group and a fantastic community. So Battle Shades, people, don't forget Battle Shades. And then from Twitter, listener at Coleman Striker said, quote, "Hi, Jonathan. Have you ever or do you intend to cover any Peter Pig products?" Now, I know that I included that bit of listener feedback before, and there's actually a whole Twitter exchange between Coleman Striker and myself. They're on Twitter. I'm at CWF Gamecast. That's how you can find Wargaming Recon, or just go to wargamingrecon.com/tweet, and that'll take you right to the Facebook page, not Facebook, the Twitter feed for us. But you'll be able to see the back and forth, his comments and questions and my answers and everything. The reason why I'm including this here is that it's weird. After communicating with Coleman Striker and learning a little bit more about Peter Pig, and I had seen Peter Pig around and seen it mentioned, people off and on, said Peter Pig is pretty cool and this and that and everything. And I never really paid it a whole lot of attention, mainly because it's based in the UK, and I knew it was either impossible or really difficult to get it here in the US. So I thought, well, why bother? I'll use whatever I need locally if I can, and I'll stick with the manufacturers and producers that I've already used and I know about, or I can get more accessibly. But after having this Twitter conversation, this Twitter chat about Peter Pig, I thought, that's actually, you know, that's a good idea. Let me dive into Peter Pig and see what I can get. So I placed an order with Brookhurst Hobbies. They're based in California. They are, to my knowledge, the only U.S. distributor of Peter Pig products. And I had placed a request for some World War II stuff because Coleman Striker said that the World War II line is one of the newer ones and some of the better looking models. It might be more representative of their current work. And also because there's a secret project, which I can't talk a whole lot about at the moment, I can tell you, it's for TotalCon 2016. And so you might be aware that there's this group of fantastic individuals, Adrian and Court, who together with myself, we put on events and we run games at TotalCon, historical games at TotalCon in Mansfield, Massachusetts. So we put these events on, and I don't gotta give it maybe a little more away than I had intended to. There's a need for some World War II product in the scale of Peter Pig. And also I have a bunch of Flames of War stuff, including some things that might be missing that I thought I purchased at one point from Battlefront and whatever reason I can't find. And Peter Pig's appears to be very affordable. So I said, oh, I'll order these and I'll order some other stuff that might be or might not be in relation to an event that may or may not be happening at TotalCon 2016. There's a reason why I don't play poker, people. I did not have a bluff-worthy face or expression. People say it's because I'm Italian and I wear my emotions and my thoughts on my face, as it were, instead of my sleeve or in my hands. When I talk, I do the stereotypical Italian thing with my hands going a mile a minute. And it's why if you ever watch any of these recordings live, you don't see my hands usually because I have to sit on them or I have to hold my hands together and be like, don't move the hands because it's distracting to people who watch the live stream while you talk. They'll be like, why are your hands doing like crazy things and look like you're just being ridiculous and don't know how to dance correctly? It's because I'm Italian and I talk with my hands is the problem. So anyway, the Peter Pig stuff, I placed an order with Brookhurst for the items, which I'm not revealing what they are at the moment. And it was odd because I had heard from a friend who had ordered from Brookhurst before that they take a while to process online orders. They have a website, you place the order online and everything. And I thought, okay, that's, you know, some places just take a while. And I got an automated reply saying they had received my order, and it's been weeks and weeks, and I think it's been almost a month actually, with nothing else, no additional confirmation, no notice of shipping or anything. They haven't even processed the payment, which is really weird to me. And I had learned that they keep track of everything by hand. So although they have a website and the website does, you know, the ordering and that kind of stuff, you can order through it. They have, I suppose, actual ledgers with like pen and pencil. They grab a piece of paper and they write down like model, blah, 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 and so-and-so ordered this. And that's how they do their entire business, which astonishes me in this day and age. And especially since As far as I know, they are the only distributor in the U.S. of Peter Pig products, which is really weird that they would do this. And they have this online web store that you can place a order. Anyway, so I have to get in touch with them because I don't know what's going on. There's a hiccup or something. And I was really hoping to be able to do a Peter Pig episode for this 2015 podcast season. Doesn't look like that's going to happen. There's just been no communication from Brookhurst. And when I placed the order, I had included some comments. I had some questions about stuff. Nothing. It's just, it's really odd. So I'm not quite sure if I should just cancel. And I'm told if I cancel, I need to call California. I can't email or anything because the technology side of things is not their strong point, which is odd. If you're not going to do a full embracing and supporting of technology, why would you have an online web store where people can go and place orders? Why not just require it to be mail order, literally mail order, or over the phone or a fax or something like that? Why utilize this newer technology? I mean, internet's not new nowadays, but newer technology to allow people to order online if it's not fully supported, which I don't get. So maybe this stuff's back ordered or something. I don't know, but I would have appreciated knowing that because they didn't say it on the website, but I might have to cancel from Brookhurst and order direct from Peter Pig, which was my original thought. Just go to the source, right? And get it and deal with the more expensive shipping from the UK and all that kind of stuff. And when I found the Brookhurst, I thought, this could be worth it, right? Because it's in the U.S. and it'll be easier and all that kind of stuff. And it doesn't seem to be. Needless to say, all this will eventually get put into an episode should I ever be able to do a Peter Pig episode, which I hope I can actually talk about the Peter Pig products that I get and my thoughts about the sculpts and all that sort of stuff. It's been asked for. Coleman Stryker would love to hear it. It's partly because I think Peter Pig gets a decent amount of coverage in the UK, of course, and in Europe, and maybe even other parts of the world. I don't think there's a whole lot of contact, really, with Peter Pig products here in North America, or definitely not in this part of the US anyway. And so I think Coleman Stryker was really interested to see what me, as an American, would have to say about the stuff. And I'm really hoping that Brookhurst Hobby sends the items. Price was great. I would love to have them. They look good on the website. I don't know. I can't say with any certainty about anything. So if anyone has any ideas or input about how to proceed or suggestions for me, I'd love to hear it from you. Jonathan@wargamingrecon.com, where there's a Facebook page and Twitter and all that sort of stuff. So it's really, really weird. Moving forward, let's dive into another Twitter comment that came from @PopCultureCube, who said of episode 142, which was that Age of Sigmar episode with guest Aaron Bostian. He said, quote, love the hashtag Age of Sigmar episode. Dropping points is one of the trick. That's not what he said. I misread my notes. Loving the Age of Sigmar episode. Totally agree. Dropping point values is amazing. Unquote. So that is from listener Pop Culture Cube on Twitter. So thank you for your comments and your thoughts. I gotta agree. For me personally, when I left the GW metric and I was no longer beholden to having to figure out points costs, and looking at the army list and say, oh, I need 1,750 points and I can get 1,748 with this, but that means I'm 2 points under. Can I try to get the 1,750 or I want a 2,500 point list? I need to do this, but this is going to put me 4 points over. Is my opponent going to be okay with that? Is this right? And really trying to get that to work is I was playing to the list. I was not playing a game. I was just moving numbers around really is what it was. And at the time, I didn't realize how restricting that was for me and how much I felt just bound by it. And so when I moved away from point systems and moved into things like Black Powder, where there's an addendum with points, but no one really uses that per se, not around here anyway. It's just, this is what we're going to do when you bring stuff and you do it and that's that. It was so freeing for me. I felt liberated. And I'm hoping that it has the same effect for others who play Age of Sigmar. So I know when I talked about the episode, I'm going to say generally positive about the overall Age of Sigmar stuff. And there were things that I was not positive about. But the lack of point system, I think, is one of the best things GW did because they were so beholden to it for such a long time. And it can have advantages. I think in this regard, it has a lot of negatives in that the best thing GW could have done was to drop the points and say, there's no points. They knew people were probably going to be upset about other changes that were made with Age of Sigmar. So just go full hog, right? Dive right in. No points or dropping all that. Bring whatever you want. What's going to make it fun for you and fun for your opponent. Make an enjoyable time. Let's have fun with one another instead of trying to be so combative, right, and challenging. So I think that it's hard and confusing to really move away from points as a gamer. You're there and you're so used to having this point system and having to do whatever. And then to try to figure out what you need to do in order to play a game with a friend without points can be really tricky and just confusing. So making that jump isn't easy, but I think it's an important one. And once you make that jump, I think for a lot of people, they'll also feel the way I did. They'll feel liberated, which is, it's important. And this actually kind of, I got a lot of feedback about the Age of Sigmar episode, which is great because that's one of the reasons why I wanted to do it. I knew that people were so charged up in their emotions, both positive and negative, about the changes and perceived changes for Warhammer Fantasy Battles. And part of the changes were ones that really excited me, and that's why I really wanted to discuss it on the show. But I also knew that because people were so charged up, that there would be some great listener feedback about it. I've often said that the mailbag section of the show is one of my favorites because the thing I love the most about podcasting is being able to interact with you, the listener, to be able to see you and communicate with you. That's what really makes me excited. It's the whole community aspect that Wargaming allows. It has that environment it nurtures and allows us to get together, have a good time with people that we enjoy, and just have fun. And for me, a kind of a microcosm of that to some degree is the listener feedback, is having that mailbag section. So I knew that I'd be able to get that and then also be able to share a lot of other people's opinions on the show. Not everyone has a podcast. Not everyone has a web show or anything. Not everyone's on TV or has movies, but a lot of us have opinions and thoughts that are completely valid and worth sharing. And so I love being able to share the things that you're thinking and that you're passionate about and being able to share it here on the show, because if you care about it or if you're thinking something, chances are someone else is too, or someone else cares about it. So I love being able to, in some way, share that platform so that it's not just me speaking, it's you and your buddies and your other friends, or I mean, people maybe you've never met, but people who are like you, who have this love of wargaming. So I love being able to do that, and I knew that I could do that, really, by opening it up for Age of Sigmar. So that is one thing that I was looking forward to. I should kind of talk a little bit about my process for recording an episode. And the reason why is I had received some constructive criticism for the Age of Sigmar episode. I'm going to say it's completely justified. I knew going in that it would be a tricky episode because people have such strong feelings, and they continue to have such strong feelings about Age of Sigmar and the changes. And whenever you dive into something that's so controversial, it's almost impossible to get out of it without being burned, right? To have some scorch marks on you. No matter what you do, not everyone's going to like it. And I get that, right? That's okay. I've been doing this for years, and so I'm used to it. But things were a little bit different with my process with Age of Sigmar, in prepping for the episode, that is. So before I kind of dive into that, because I want to talk about it just because of the sheer quantity of feedback and the quality of feedback that I got pertaining to the Age of Sigmar episode, I just want to take some time to talk about the process I use to take an idea that I have from brainstorm to recording for an episode of Wargaming Recon. And this, just aside of the whole Age of Sigmar situation, this might be of just interest to everyone, because I don't think I really have talked about it, and not in this way anyway, on the show. I know in the past I've explained just a little bit about some of the aspects of it that I do, and that some things are a little more time consuming than others, but I don't think I've really kind of gone into discussing it and approaching it, the topic, in this way. So you just might appreciate the behind the scenes aspect of it. So as soon as I pick a topic for an episode, I have to make a decision. And the decision is it a topic that would be improved or would benefit from having a guest? And if so, I have to choose who I think would be the best guest to have for that. Who's going to be the most appropriate? And as soon as I make that determination, I approach the person and I ask them if they want to be on the show. And we have this dialogue to try to book them, whoever they are, to say, well, this is when I would like to do the recording. Are you able to also record with me then? Does that not work? Let's plan another time and try to see what works best for both our schedules. Sometimes I have more than one guest on at the same time. Not often. I think I've only done that once or twice. Usually it's one-on-one. I like that one-on-one feel. For me, it's kind of like being at the coffee table with someone and you're just kind of hanging out and interacting with them as a friend. And I really enjoy that feel for me. And I think is something that listeners really appreciate too. It can take a long time to book someone to be a guest. And I'm going to come back to this later on in the show when I talk about Patreon a little bit. But on average, it takes weeks, maybe about a month, 3 to 6 weeks, I would say. A few times it's taken me just under a year to book someone. And I know that sounds insane, right? But lives get busy. People are doing stuff. People have all sorts of products. I do. They do have everything. Life happens, right? So it can literally take a year. And that's, you know, time spent looking at calendars and then sending emails and waiting for responses and thinking about adjustments that need to be made and just all that kind of stuff. So it takes a lot of time to get to that point. And this is step one, right? This is just the first step I take. I've chosen the idea, decided whether or not a guest is appropriate and who they would be, and I'm trying to book them. The first step I take. So after that kind of gets worked out or seems to be in the process, I wait until shortly before I'm going to record. So I spend 1 to 2 weeks before the recording date doing my research. On average, I spend the entire 1 to 2 weeks, as much of my free moments as I can spare. I do have a regular full-time job. I got a wife. I got a baby and other responsibilities. But I spend 1 to 2 weeks diving into the research and looking up information about the guests and learning more about them. If I don't know a whole lot already, what new stuff they're doing, more about the topic, resources for the topic, where can I get that information, what's worth sharing with everyone. And I kind of go into information overload. I just try to absorb as much as I can of the good quality information. And this is also the time if I'm going to be talking about playing a game in which I try to actually play the game as much as possible. So for example, when I did the Naval Thunder episode with Adrian Benson, for the few weeks leading up to it, we played the game a fair bit, as much as we could for the free time. I spent a lot of time reading the rules and going over it and looking at how it played and reading what other people had to say about their experiences playing the rules and everything and absorbing pictures and just a lot of time, just as much research as I could to get a quality feel for the topic and for the guest. And that covers everything, you know, going to be just whatever I really think could be appropriate to share. So in addition to doing all that research, I also try to organize my thoughts during that 1 to 2 weeks before the recording. And I just try to think, okay, well, is this going to be appropriate to share? Is this not even just appropriate, but is this going to be of interest to share? People might not care that like 9 people work to create a rule set unless those 9 are notable for some reason. So I got to decide what stuff I want to leave out, what's worth including, because this is, at most, it's an hour show. It's 40 minutes, usually 40 to 45 minutes. And that includes time with announcements and instructions and all sorts of stuff. So new extra stuff is about like 45 minutes. And you figure people talk at different speeds and allowing time for guests to give their thoughts on things. And when I have a guest on, one of my strong decisions that I try to adhere to is you get to hear me every single episode. You don't get to hear that guest every single episode, right? So I try to make it possible for the guest to speak as much as possible because they're like a treat. They're a treat for me, and I hope they're a treat for you to be able to hear what they have to say and to get to know them a little bit better and for them to just have that platform to communicate to all of you. So for that hour episode, I try to give them as much time as possible so that they talk as much as they want and they're willing, and that I pick up the slack is my goal. And for episodes where it's just me, such as this, of course, I have to do more of that. I have to make sure that I'm available to do more of the discussions and everything. So that colors my approach to organizing my thoughts. Obviously, I know I have to fill more airtime if it's just myself, so I might have to organize my thoughts differently, and I might also have to do research a little differently to get more information rather than less. And if there's going to be a guest, especially if I know the guest more than someone who's just been on once, if it's someone who's been on a few times and I've gotten to know them, or even if it's the first time, but I know them outside of the show, if I've communicated with them a lot or if I know them personally, I get a feel for them and also about how much they want to probably say and what sort of stuff they want to say. So then I can kind of tailor my own research to say, well, they're going to cover this kind of stuff. So that way I don't have to spend as much time making sure I have just the foundation information on that. I can spend more time on my own thoughts of interpreting it and reacting to that information. And they're probably not going to cover this kind of information. So I need to make sure I do get the core information about that, the vital statistics, so to speak, on that sort of stuff, plus my own thoughts and reactions and everything. The day before the recording. It can be up to 3 days before. I'll spend those, say, 2 to 3 days where I take all that information that I got, all that research and all the, how I organize my thoughts and everything, and I put it into this really cool free program called Wunderlist. It's Wunderlist. It's this great free web-based, cloud-based program. You can get apps on your smart devices and everything that are free. And it's a list-making kind of thing. So it's cool. You can use it if you're going to go to the supermarket or you have chores you want to do. I use it so I can have talking points. And I put everything in there. I put all my URLs to make sure I get the links proper, Twitter handles, topics I need to remember, talking points. For example, I put all the listener feedback that I'm going to use, plus all my announcements, things like about Patreon or whatever. I put that all into the list I'm creating. So that way I make sure I get everything correct because I don't want to get someone's name wrong. I don't want to get you a wrong web address, anything that I need to make sure that I cover, any just talking points I need to make sure I raise. And I don't go into depth on stuff unless it's an exact quote. So if there's listener feedback, I'm going to put the listener feedback in exactly as it appears because then I also use this when I write the show notes. But if it's just that I want to make sure that I talk about orcs and goblins, I'll put green skins in and I know that's a trigger for my brain to bring up the topic. So I don't really do any sort of writing of questions when I have a guest or any of that. I have the topics and I put the topics in. And even if there's not a guest, it's topics and like bullet points really. And then that tells me, make sure you talk about this and this and this and this. And then I order it so that it's in the flow of how the episode will progress. So things at the top of the list come first and so forth all the way to the end. It helps me so that I actually have it up when I do a recording. If you ever see a live recording that I do, you'll notice that every so often I'm looking down. And part of that is, so I want to check the chat room and see what's going on there, if there's anything that needs my attention. But also part of it is, I'm looking down at my bullet lists, at my outline of the show on Wunderlist to make sure that I'm covering things and make sure that I'm not messing up too badly, so to speak, that I just get all that sort of stuff. So I will look down from time to time and look at that because I keep that up on my MacBook Pro and I record into my old mid-2007 iMac. And the iMac is great because I have the iMac and then I actually have a separate second monitor that I usually have a music playlist or other content on. But sometimes I turn that off because it gets too bright, and gives just crazy lighting issues for the live stream. So then I refer back to my MacBook, which has the Wunderlist in it. And every single episode that I record, actually every video I've recorded, any of that kind of stuff that you've seen where I'm commenting about stuff, I have Wunderlist up and I'm referring to it. And I have separate lists for different things, like a list for each episode I'm doing. I have a list for feedback, a list for all sorts of other stuff. That way I can just kind of go wherever I need to and it's easy. It doesn't make any impact on the sound quality or that sort of stuff. I can just kind of dive in and make sure that I stay on track for all of you. And so I do that for the 2 to 3 days before. And I will literally spend as much of my extra time that I need to working on this and making sure it's just right. I have a tendency now actually to use my lunch breaks for this. Since I tend to record on Saturdays, I'll spend the Thursday and the Fridays of my lunch creating this. I bring my laptop to work and during my lunch break, I'll go in and go into Wunderlist and just start adding stuff and making sure everything's just in order and that I have all of that. And then the fourth step is the day of the recording. I devote an hour to kind of a final look at my outline, at my research, at the Wunderlist to make sure that I get everything that I need to, that I'm refamiliarized with all the stuff that I want to cover and that I want to talk about, because there's nothing worse than when you, say, watch a video or when you listen to a podcast and it's clear that the person there, the person, the content creator, the podcaster, the person on the video hasn't done their homework and doesn't know what they're talking about or is not ready. They're not fully prepped. It's a disservice to you. This is not my job, right? This is a hobby. I get fun out of doing it, but it has to be worth your time. So I have to make it quality for you. And if I'm just here hemming and hawing and I don't know what's going on, that's not enjoyable to listen to. It's not enjoyable to watch. And it's rude, actually, in my opinion. And I think it's even worse when there's a guest because you want to make sure, I want to make sure that I perform my best for the guests to help them to look and sound their best. if I'm not prepared, it's insulting to them. They've taken the time to come on the show and to be there. And if I'm just like, hey, what's going on? You do stuff, but I don't remember what because I couldn't be bothered to look it up or learn anything about you or about your products or anything. So you just talk because I don't care. That's what it comes across as. I don't care. I'm being rude. I'm being insulting. And that's inappropriate. Or at least for me, I feel that's the wrong thing to do here on Wargaming Recon. So not only do I spend all that time doing the research and the outline and everything, but I want to make sure I do a final look because things change. Like I'm doing all that other stuff in the weeks before and then in the days leading up. And like you go to sleep and you forget stuff, or I do anyway, or things pop up. So I really try to spend an hour before the recording, sometime during that day, before the recording, just to refamiliarize myself with everything. And it helps me to kind of reorient my brain to refocus on the task at hand. And then as we get closer to the recording, I do final promotions for the live recording, things on social media and that sort of stuff. I'll do final equipment checks, make sure the computer's working right, the webcam's appropriate, and I got all the software going the way I want, the mics, everything's all set up, and things aren't having difficulties. And then I open up, now since I'm doing live recordings, I open up Google Plus because I do a Google Plus Hangout on Air, which allows the video recording to be broadcast live to everyone over the internet through YouTube Live, but also it saves it into my YouTube account so that you can then watch the video later on. And I get that open and then I press the record button and bam, off we go. And that's my normal procedure. And I know I talked a lot of length about my normal procedure for Wargaming Recon. And part of the reason was I wanted to give you that look at how I do things, but also I wanted to make sure to tell you this is the normal way. And the Age of Sigmar episode was different in my prep for it. Whereas I spend, you know, say up to a month to book a guest. Booking a guest was easy. Aaron, I knew was going to be on the show. We were going to talk about it. And with his job, he has scheduling conflicts, but generally I could say to him, Aaron, do you want to come on the show? Let's pick a date and it works. And I think we had to adjust a little bit, but it wasn't too bad. A week or two difference, but we knew we were going to do it and we nailed it down. That was all set. What was very different was the amount of time for research. Knowing how strong people's emotions were and are about Age of Sigmar, I really wanted to tap into that. And I wanted to spend as much time as I could researching that. So I spent, instead of my usual, 1 to 2 weeks doing research, I spent a month researching. Just a month diving into things. Reading the 4 pages of rules. Spending time on the Games Workshop website. Spending time on different social media groups where people are both for and against Age of Sigmar. I spent time just thinking about it. Were their opinions valid? Were their criticisms valid? Would I feel the same way? And how did things play out? And why would Games Workshop do this? And I tried to immerse myself as much as possible into all of it to really just dive into Age of Sigmar because I knew it would be so controversial, but also because it had been so long since I had really anything to do with a Games Workshop game. So I wanted to make sure that I was on the same level where I would be for other stuff, because if I wasn't, then it would be a disservice to you, right? Because you're taking the time to listen to what I have to say, and you would be taking the time to listen to what I would have to say about Age of Sigmar. And so I couldn't just wing it or anything. So I had to go that extra mile. So I spent more and more and more time on that. I would say it was about double the amount of time for all of that. And then fast forward, I get my Wunderlist all set up, my outline. And whereas I would normally spend an hour on the morning of just kind of refamiliarizing myself with everything, I realized that I wasn't able to do that with this. I only had maybe half hour, 45 minutes, I think. And part of that was I had to use that time to also pick my word choices. So I don't even think I still have, or I would show it for those in the live feed. But that morning I had printed out the 4 pages of rules. And I had written on them, you know, my thoughts about the different sections, almost as if I were an editor. And I used to be an editor for my high school newspaper, and I was a journalist for my college paper. So I'm used to editing things and having people edit them and just writing in and crossing stuff out. And that's how I approached it, so that I would get my thoughts. Normally, I spend a little more time on my word choices to make sure that I'm carefully choosing what I'm going to say and how I'm going to say it. And I don't script the show by any means, but if there's certain words that I want to use, I put them in the outline. And I want to make sure that when I do talk about something, I do it in a way that pays proper respect to everything, because words have power, right? every word means something a little differently. They have different connotations. So it's usually not helpful for someone when they're talking about a product to refer to it or any part of it as dumb or stupid like I had. However, partly because I didn't have as much time to devote to my word choice selection, and I should have devoted more time, but again, life happens. I have a baby and just I wasn't able to. And that's one of the things that happens. Life changes and have to move on and adapt to those changes. And the priority will always be for me. For my family will come before the show. Always. It's just how it is. And so there was need that particular day for me to be spending more time in the morning with my daughter, and taking care of her, which meant there was less time for me to be thinking about the proper word choices for Age of Sigmar. And, if there was more time for the word choice, I probably wouldn't have referred to sections of it as dumb or stupid. I do still feel that way, but I would have found a different word to use, one that may not have been so inflammatory. And I will say though, that I wanted to make sure that in that 45 minutes that I had to spend as much time as possible on thoughts that I knew I wanted to share. And I tried to think about what things Aaron would share and what he might not share, because I've kind of learned a cadence and a rhythm with them, as I do with every guest. And it's one of the things that I think allows us to have that really good chemistry, because we like each other, we get along, and it's just so much fun. So being able to kind of get in tune with that, I think it shows in an episode, it makes it more enjoyable. And that also kind of allows me to know, well, he's going to talk about this sort of stuff because he's really interested, say, in the painting aspect and the gaming and the community aspect. So he's going to cover that stuff. So maybe I need to be covering this other stuff and approach it from a different way. So as such, I spent more of the time doing that sort of thing instead of worrying about, well, what should I say instead of calling something dumb or something stupid or so forth. And like I said, I received some completely justified constructive criticism about the Age of Sigmar episode. And I would say part of it is because of the words that I chose, calling sections of the rules dumb or stupid, not what you would expect in a podcast, right? Especially not from Wargaming Recon. I don't normally use those words here. I might perhaps be thinking them, but I'm going to use a different word, one that's a little more neutral, one that's not going to be so inflammatory, because that's not the role of it. This is not a shock kind of thing. It's not shock radio. It's here to inform and educate and to entertain. So I'm not here to insult people or upset anyone. That's not my purpose. If it was, it would be a completely different kind of show. My general rule is you only get to hear about the things that I like, that I enjoy, or that I support. If it doesn't make it on the show, either I don't know about it, or it's because I don't like it, I don't support it, or I don't believe in it, or the people. And Age of Sigmar came in because I had high hopes for it. And even after that episode, I still have high hopes for it because of the overarching philosophy of the importance and emphasis that Games Workshop placed on working with your fellow gamers to create the most fun and come up with the most fun result. They say, yeah, you can roll a dice, which is something they've always said, but they've expanded on it. Instead of just rolling a dice to determine an outcome, they say, well, choose what's going to be the most fun, the most interesting. And that's what role players have been doing for years. They play a role-playing game. And it might be more exciting for your character to suffer a humiliating loss. And if you rolled the dice and you won, you'd say, well, that's not going to happen, but it might be more fun for the story or for the evening. And now Games Workshop's doing that with this. So that's what I'm loving the most about Age of Sigmar. And also that Age of Sigmar seems to be really fostering a new community and welcoming new people into wargaming who might not otherwise have wanted to participate in it. However, there were some sections that I didn't like, and I remain firm and behind them. And I still believe that the Age of Sigmar episode is a fair and balanced discussion and view of Age of Sigmar. But I should say, and especially if I didn't say it in that episode, I want to apologize. It's not a review of the game and how it plays. It was a discussion, a sneak peek, a look at the rules as written and the change from Warhammer Fantasy Battles from how it was before to the Age of Sigmar thing. It was not a review, and I never meant for it to be interpreted as a review. A review would have been more critical, actually. It would have had even more research done into it. It would have spent less time of my time researching into how people felt about it and more into how does it actually play. I would have spent time playing it. I would have spent time analyzing how others played it. and that sort of stuff. And it definitely would have been more critical, not in a negative way, but just in requiring a more discerning eye to provide a more evaluative experience for the episode. So it was not a review. From some of the feedback from people, it's clear that it came across as a review, and that was not my intention. I do want to read some comments from YouTube. MC1 Gamer had some comments that I shared previously, but they were shortened. So I want to share his full comments, or hers, I believe it's a he, comments that he had shared on YouTube. It was on YouTube, you can actually leave comments in case you don't know, on individual recordings. So it was the live stream episode recordings for Age of Sigmar. And I'm going to share his whole lengthy comment here, just because I want everyone to see. And he is critical, but justifiably so, I would say, of how Age of Sigmar was covered in the episode. So, quote, "Jonathan, I strongly suggest actually playing the game. A lot of your issues with the game are common initially, mostly because the game is such a departure from the rules of all previous editions and people fear change. However, it plays so much different than it reads. 4 pages only, but a ton of depth and potential. Sounds to me like you haven't placed a single mini to the tabletop and played even one game. I had some similar thoughts, but after more than 20 games, I've fallen in love with the system. Easy to learn and far more complexity than most give it credit. Formation of units alone is one thing a lot of players are exploring, and the angst of who will get first turn, as well as the tactics in activating units in the most beneficial order in close combat. Also, where to remove casualties, potentially stranding units that haven't attacked yet. All much more depth than a single read and no playtime can give you. Give it a try, you might change your mind. Nearly everyone that I know that has done so has had different feelings about AOS, Age of Sigmar. Not all like it, even so, it's a matter of preference and style, but before you judge a system, play it. It's hard to cast any judgment, positive or negative, until you've given it a try." So I want to thank him again for the comments. Obviously, I don't agree with everything in the comments, but I'm not going to. Even if it was completely glowing, I still wouldn't necessarily agree with everything. I think part of it, like I said, is because maybe I inadvertently gave the impression that the episode was a review of it, and it's not. So there is that. And before a review, I would play, or I would read what others had done when they played and really analyze it. I want to share that. And I want to move forward because I know we're getting near the end of the today's recording, actually, where I want to just kind of cover and talk about some other comments that have come in regarding the topic of co-host. So every so often, people will write in or ask if I've thought about ever having a co-host and what my thoughts about that might happen to be. And recently, there's been a few bits of listener feedback about this. So from Facebook listener Jay said, quote, "Have you ever considered having a co-host or a revolving stable of co-hosts you could go to on particular topics? Although I always like your show, I prefer the episodes when have a dialogue with a guest." And then from Patreon, backer Jamie said, quote, "I'd have to go with the interviews for the most part. You do a great show, but when you and a guest get on a good rift, it's fantastic," unquote. So this is actually a really interesting topic to me because it does come up a fair bit, but also because Wargaming Recon would not be here today if it weren't for a co-host. So you may not have been listening back then, but prior to 2010, the show was on a break, one of the frequent ones back then, unfortunately. And I was approached by Mr. Tom Barberlay. He was a listener, and he said that he really thought that there's something great in Wargaming Recon and that I should bring the show back, and that he would be a co-host to help me bring it back and lessen the burden, because it's easier, and it's true, it is easier for a podcaster when there is a co-host, because that way you don't have to carry the show single-handedly. You can have other people to kind of help out. And so he said that I could he'd be a co-host if I brought the show back. And I did, and the show came back. And then he was there as my co-host. Eventually, he left to pursue other projects, which is, it happens all the time with people. And then I've thought about, ever since that day, about having a co-host, about having either someone who's just like an on-air personality, so to speak, someone whose only role is to come on and record with me, or have a more full partnership with someone where we take on and share all the responsibilities, things like social media, the editing, and all the stuff. Not the financial responsibilities, which I would retain, but like all the other kind of stuff. And so I've thought about that, and I have to say that I really do like your idea, Jay. about having either a single co-host or a stable of co-hosts who kind of pop in from time to time. I do try to do that now, except without, I don't do it with co-hosts. I like to do it with guests, actually. And before I go further, I want to say I'm not closing the door on having a co-host. If it was the right co-host, I'd love to have one. But I want to just kind of explain what I'm doing now and how I think it's kind of filling the same kind of need, although it's not obviously identical. So I do have certain guests that come on, and they come on frequently. For example, Aaron Boshin, who I mentioned previously in this episode, he's done 7 episodes since 2013, and that's just within the past few years. He is the most frequent guest that I've had on the show, and you figure there's 20 to 24 episodes per year that I do, and 7 out of those, that's a decent chunk. Adrian Benson has done 2 so far this year alone, for the 2015 season, and he might do more. And then there are certain guests that I make sure that I invite every year. Henry Hyde comes on every year. Jesper Ortiz or someone from Karmasawe Publishers comes on every year, at least once a year, sometimes twice, actually. Someone from TotalCon comes on every year. For 2015, it was Stephen Parento. He's the event director. Someone from Huzzah is coming on now just about every year. I had Dean Emerson who came on. He was last year, I believe. Angela Parento, her husband Steve, is the event director for TotalCon, and she's the promotional or media director for TotalCon. She's been a guest on the show 3 or 4 times since 2013. Ben Gerber, he's the head honcho of Troll in the Corner and a game designer in his own right. He's been on 3 or 4 times too since 2013. So I mean, that's a small group of guests, right? But it's clear that they do come on with some sort of frequency. And the key to remember is that this show doesn't come out weekly or daily or anything like that. It tends to be twice a month. Every other week, sometimes that means it's 3 times a month. I take a break in the winter for my birthday, for Christmas, and the new year, and that's when we do our best of episodes. So you're talking about, for 2015, right, I have 24 brand new episodes intended for the year, plus 2 best of episodes. So out of 24 episodes in the year, I just went through, what was that? 8 people, right? So 8 out of 24. So if I have each of them appear just once, that's 8 out of 24 episodes. Which is great, because I love having the guests, because like I said, I like for you to hear people other than me talking, because you get to hear me all the time. Now, what really surprises me is something when I look at the stats, and I don't normally like to share stats, because numbers bore people generally, right? They kind of bore me, too, although I have a weird fascination with them. When some podcasters look at stats, they look at it mainly to see X number of people listened to this episode, X number of people did this, X number of people did that. I enjoy as much as the next guy saying that like 2,000 people downloaded an episode or 1,500 people listened to a show or whatever. But what I'm really looking for are trends. I want to see what you like to hear, because you may not even realize it, or you may not even have the time to send me feedback about it. But just by listening to the show, I can tell if more of you listen to a particular episode, you probably enjoyed the topic or you listened to it for some reason. So maybe I should do that topic or something relating to that topic again, or have that guest on again. And I'm able to see a trend through certain episodes. And if certain types of episodes, especially in a year, have performed really well or don't perform well, that tells me something, right? So I can tell you, when I look at trends for episodes that contain guests, things that are, I think they're weird, but interesting. So let's go back to 2013, because 2013 is when, in my mind, I really started to make Wargaming Recon what it is today. It came back in 2010. It was a little different than 2010 and 2011 and 2012. 2013 is really like, for me, the rebirth when it got the name, renamed it, all sorts of stuff, and just really kind of plowed forward. It's also the first year where I was keeping methodical statistics. So I'm only looking at the 10 most popular episodes for each year. In 2013, 8 out of the top 10 episodes, 8 out of the most 10 most popular episodes had guests. So that's 80% of them, right? That says, well, people love having guests on. They love having someone else to talk in addition to Jonathan, have that dynamic. The highest rated episode was episode 1, 2, 3, and 4 had guests. And then there was some in the bottom end of the top 10. So I was like, whoa, let's have lots of guests. And so in 2014, I was like, we'll try to do as many guests as possible. And then when I look at the top 10, 5 of the top 10 episodes, 5 of the 10 most popular episodes have guests, including the top 3. So the most popular, the second most popular, and third most popular episodes of 2013 had guests. Now, this is a drop, right? In 2013, 80% of the most popular episodes had guests. In 2014, half of the most popular episodes had guests. Why, right? It's weird. And then when we look at this year, 2015, I know it's not over yet, but, so I understand that. But if we look at this year, four of the 10 most popular episodes have guests. None of them are in the top three. So episode 4, 5, 7, and 10 in rankings have guests. That's only 40%. So when I'm looking at this and when I'm looking at the trends, they're kind of at odds from what I hear in feedback. In what, in my heart, I kind of think would be more true, which would be that it'd be great to have a co-host or a stable of co-hosts. It lessens the burden on me. It makes it more fun and exciting for everyone. And yet, for some reason, episodes with guests are less popular each year from 2013 on. And this year, they're at, I say, an all-time low. So to me, that says that people don't want someone else on the show with me. They don't want guests. Maybe a co-host, a more familiar face who's there every time, would do better. I don't know. It was more of interest to you. But I read this as people prefer the solo episodes, which it surprises me, right? It really does surprise me that, you know, it dropped from 80% to 50% to now 40%. It's just, it's a complete and utter surprise. It just, I'm astonished, really, is what it is. So I'm not saying no to having one or more co-hosts or a stable of co-hosts. I'm not saying I'm going to only do solo episodes where I'm not going to have a guest anymore. I love having guests, and I think you do too, regardless of what the trends are showing me. It could just be that the topics I'm picking for when I do episodes without a guest are striking a chord. I'm also able to tell by looking at the trends that content pertaining to conventions is very popular. It doesn't even have to be coverage of a convention, but it could be things that would be useful for a convention. It could be guests who I know from a convention, or it could be tips for what to do at a convention. Those are the most popular episodes right now, and it's amazing. So coming back to the issue of co-hosts that Jamie and that Jay had brought up, I'm completely open to having one or more co-hosts, having a stable co-host, or having one. I know Meeples and Miniatures, they do a fantastic job. Neil Shook is an amazing podcaster. He has the longest running wargaming podcast in UK. He started originally after I did, I think, but roughly around the same time in 06. And one of the great things that he does is he does have people besides himself who are on, and then he also does guests too. And his show is fantastic. It's very well done. It's successful. A lot of people enjoy it. By any means, it is the bar that has been set, and it's shown clearly that having co-hosts for him and having guests is what works for him. And I know we share a similar kind of audience, and we're in the same niche, right? But it's odd looking at the trends for me anyway, for Wargaming Recon, people like the episodes where I don't have guests or have someone else on, which it is a surprise. I will tell you, as much as I would love to have a co-host, and I really would, I've approached a few people throughout the years about it, and, you know, due to commitments and other responsibilities, it hasn't necessarily worked out as one would hope, and that's okay. I do kind of like having the blend of episodes where I have someone else on the show, whether it's a guest or whatnot, and ones where it's just me, because I couldn't do an episode like this if I had a guest. Or even with a co-host, it might be more difficult. I like being able to have these episodes where it's just me speaking to you. And I can kind of use it as a soapbox to kind of get a little more personal. And I think that it allows me to open up more with you and allow you to get to know me a little bit better. And I think that's part of the allure for those of you who listen to Wargaming Recon. I think you like me or like what I present, and being able to feel that connection, I think it's important, because we have this community here that we're building. We're a community of wargamers, and we're able to entertain and educate and help one another. And I think by feeling that connection, that community is strengthened, and that may not necessarily be there as much with episodes only having guests or only having co-hosts, as it were. So I would love to have one or more co-hosts if it was the right person or persons. I probably, even with the co-host, I probably would still schedule it so that there would be content like now where it's just me. So there might be a co-host and myself, and we might have a guest, so it might be three of us recording, but it might still be where there would be episodes just with myself. And so I don't know, it's something for me to think about, but I'm really glad that the topic was raised. And so I appreciate that, Jay, and appreciate that, Jamie, for you guys asking about co-hosts and just saying how much you love when there's someone else here on the show. I love it too. If for no other reason, and I love it for more than just this, but just practically speaking, it's easier on me. I don't have to do as much. It's a little less for prep. It's a little less for actual recording. Doing a whole hour by myself, it does a job on my voice. It really makes me hoarse, and by the end, it's rough, right? So it's a little tricky that way. Of course, it's freeing, too, to just do this all on my own, because then I can do whatever I want, and I don't have to worry about how it's going to impact a co-host, so to speak. But if anyone knows of someone who would be interested and who they think would be a good fit, which is the key, I'm not just going to have anyone on the co-host, no matter who they were. We have to make it fit. But if anyone has suggestions or knows of someone, feel free to get in touch. Jonathan@wargamingrecon.com. And so now that we're moving near the end, just a few more things and we will be done with this episode. So I want to remind everyone about our sponsor, the MHWA, Maine Historical Wargamers Association. I know you get the pre-recorded thing at the beginning and end of each episode, but I just want to say yet again how appreciative I am for their support and how much I'm looking forward to being at Huzzah May 13th to the 16th, 2016. That's going to be at the Doubletree Inn in South Portland, Maine, and I'm just excited about that. I'll be there. I'll be playing games, be doing a live show. It's going to be awesome. And then Patreon. I want to thank Dave and the Wargames at Battleshades Facebook group. And I also want to thank Jamie at Drake Poldragon on Twitter for their support on Patreon. Thank you so much. I couldn't do it without the fantastic sponsor we have and without the great support on Patreon. Patreon's amazing. And actually, I'm doing something new with Patreon. I have two new backer levels. And I did a whole video on this, which you may have seen. It's on YouTube. It's on our Facebook page. But in case you didn't, I just want to mention I have two new backer levels that I'm really excited about. The first is at $5 an episode, you can get mailed to you each month a Wargaming Recon postcard. It has the logo on the front, and then on the back, I will write a personal message to you. I will physically mail it to you anywhere that the U.S. Postal Service can send mail to. You get it in your mailbox with a personal note from me. That'll be every month. And that's for those of you who back at the $5 backer level. And on top of that, you'll get thanked by name in every episode of Wargaming Recon that you back, just like the $3 backer level, so this is an extra thing. Or you can back at $8 per episode, and if you do, you get a really cool Wargaming Recon measuring tape. It has a Wargaming Recon logo on it. It's small enough to fit in your pocket, so you can have it with you all the time. You never have to worry about not having this, or when you go gaming, you can keep it in your gaming bag. It's really easy to keep with you. It looks good. I like it. It works well. And it's great for any game where you need to measure stuff. So that's at $8 per episode. This is limited to 10 people right now because I want to see how it does. I'm really excited about it, but I know not everyone might be. So if this does well, I'll add more and we'll have it so it won't be limited to just 10 individuals. But I will physically mail this to you again anywhere the U.S. Postal Service can mail packages. And if you back at the $8 level, you'll get the Wargaming Recon measuring tape. But you'll also be thanked by name and every episode in which you back. So we have that going on. And then I am close to reaching the next goal on Patreon. We're just $9 away from the goal, which is to obtain a digital scheduler. I talked earlier in the episode about some of the difficulties involved with scheduling guests. Imagine how much more difficult it would be to not only schedule guests, but to have to schedule co-hosts all the time, right? So there's this online service I use, but I can get the premium version, which makes it so much easier. It integrates with everything, with the calendars. It makes it much easier and cuts down on the time necessary to book a guest. And at $9 more an episode, we can get there. All that takes is three backers, three of you to back the episode at $3 an episode, or, you know, one of you backing at the measuring tape level and someone at a dollar level, and you're there. Two people doing the postcard level. Bam, we're there. So once I reach the level where I can get the digital scheduler, I'll be able to have more guests on. And then who knows, might make it easier to get one or more co-hosts on as well. So that's something to keep in mind. And you can get more information by going to wargamingrecon.com/Patreon. And you can also go there to back and support the show. So thank you again, everyone, for taking the time to listen to this episode of Wargaming Recon. I want to remind you the show notes can be had at wargamingrecon.com/WR145. Wargamingrecon.com/WR145 has all the stuff we talked about. The next episode will be out October 12th, 2015. So until then, please keep your comments and your feedback coming. I love getting it. And maybe down the road we'll do another mailbag focused episode, but between now and then we'll have all sorts of other stuff, guests and other content to talk about. So as always, you know the drill. No matter how busy you are in your life, no matter how much time you're spending sending me your feedback that I love to read, you have to, you got it, you need to keep on gaming. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Cast, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon and all of the other podcasts that you know and love. Or you can always stream and download the latest episode of Wargaming Recon by heading on over to the show notes for that episode.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner Network at trollitc.com and give Indie Talks a listen.
A wargamer and want to know what to do when you're an Australian wargamer, then you need to tune into the Hobby Desk for Australian wargamers. This is a member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network, and we're here to give you the best possible things that Australian wargamers can give to you, the listeners. And I hope you enjoy what we do, because guess what? It's coming more and more often and more awesome for you who listen to the Hobby Desk on the Troll in the Corner podcast network.
This is Andreas, Apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it as part of the Monsters of the Shattered World on Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com.
Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. Visit www.trollitc.com for more information. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.
Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 13th to the 15th, 2016, at the Doubletree Inn in Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming in New England at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information.